What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room episode. Let's see.
123.
They got me this time. Get Out the Room. Yeah. We are a horror pop culture podcast. I am your host, Dave, and as always, I got my people with me. And the smarty art motherfucker, Scott, what's going on, man?
I don't know much. That was off the top of my head. I was like, wow, I think it's 123. See, lucky guess. Squirrels, blind squirrels find nuts every once in a while.
Oof, that's a mouthful. And the greatest Caribbean hero, Tone. How goes it, brother?
It goes wonderfully, splendidly, splendiferously.
Splendiferous, I like that. Zeta did not come your way, correct?
No. I mean, yeah, we got quite a bit of rain, but that's it. I mean, and considering it's always fucking hot here, it was right. Nice having a 70, 80 degree day.
Man, I saw you was out there running.
Yeah, you know, I got to get rid of this COVID-19, although for me it's like a COVID-39, but we ain't going to talk about that.
Dude, I hear that. I think I do have an actual COVID-19, so I hear you.
Yes. Get Out the Room. You can find us anywhere good podcasts are found. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic. Look, just tell your mama to put it in and it'll come back out. All right? So, yeah.
Pause.
Wow. Wow. Look, if your mama wasn't getting it in, none of us would be here.
So, oh, we're moving on.
Hey, yeah, there we go. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we back. I gotta say, there is a Letty and Tick size hole in my heart this week, not having any Lovecraft Country to love up on.
The absence is felt.
I've never missed a show like this. It's been a long time since I felt this way about a show. So we had to figure out some things to put in its place. This was not as good. I feel bad even like putting the two.
Well, but hold on a minute. That's not fair, though.
I know you're right. That's why I'm saying I feel bad doing that because they're not the same. They're not the same, right? And I feel bad doing that, but by the same token, like it's, I had to pick something else up. And is it Hulu or Amazon?
Hulu.
Hulu came out with a new anthology series titled Monsterland. Now,
it's the happiest show on TV. That's pretty much the great definition for it.
Scott, you're a damn liar.
Yeah, you can motherfucking lie. Why are you doing that to people? Jesus, you are not a soothsayer, sir. What are you doing? That's a terrible thing to tell someone.
Well, I've actually read, so, you know, Monsterland's one of those interesting shows. It seems to be kind of polarizing, too. I've read reviews that think it's, you know, just God's gift to horror and just a new way to tell these types of stories. And then I've read ones where people go in thinking, you know, that it's going to be exactly what the title says, and they're disappointed to learn that it's not quite like that. And it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, you guys, when we first start talking about it, you know, again, we're trying to fill the void that Lovecraft Country and the boys have left, because we need to pick something else up and watch something new. And well, you guys had warned me, so I knew going in a little that, you know, that, oh, okay, it might not be exactly what I thought it was going in. And I've been pleasantly surprised with it. It's good. I think my first comment after the first episode, I told the two of you, it's not exactly like this, but I took it like a much darker version of Black Mirror. Where Black Mirror does the technology, the horrors of technology. This is not that. What I mean is the tone. The tone is darker Black Mirror.
Yeah.
The dystopian tone.
Yeah.
I feel it. I can feel that. I can get behind that.
It's not easy. This, you know, the one thing I'll say about this is there are times where it is enjoyable, but it's not an easy watch.
We need to address Damon's, like, characteristic underselling of this shit. Like, when I he told me, same thing, it's not easy. Meanwhile, I'm having a crisis of the fucking soul watching one of these goddamn episodes. Like, this shit is dark. Like, very dark.
It is.
Not easy.
Turn your mic up, Tom.
Not easy is not an accurate representation of what the fuck is going on there.
So here's the thing. It's a deep show where the undertones of what they're really talking to you about are not at all what they're showing you on the surface. You know, we're dealing with grief. We're dealing with, you know, what's the term?
Grief, I mean, grief is that's it, though. I mean, that's basically what it is.
No, because there is
so like much more.
Enabling.
Yes.
You know, enabling is a huge one here.
Huge. There's regret,
particularly when it comes to decisions that you could have made that would have had huge implications, not just for yourself and your sphere, but to be very honest, the entire world. And like there are legit moments here, and you almost feel like the last monologue to was it episode 3. Or episode 2. No, episode 4. The oil spill?
Yeah.
Episode four.
So that last monologue in episode 4, because up until that point, you feel like you've already gotten the point. But right. That's not the point. It's the final monologue that we see that is the point. Right?
Right.
And that's kind of the overarching theme within this show. Yeah, you're watching the entire episode for the last maybe 90 seconds to have impact. And those last moments, they still work, but they don't work as hard if you don't see the other parts of it.
That's a good way to put it. You know what I find this to be similar to is okay. I like this better than the show I'm going to relate it to, though. It reminds me a little bit of Room 104.
Yes, I think it's better. I think it's stronger.
It is better.
Room 104 is it is.
It's a good comparison.
Room 104 is hampered by its location.
Correct. Well, but it there are some really fantastic episodes that, but then there are episodes where I won't even watch them.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, oh no, I can't commit even to a half hour of this. Yeah. Monsterland, you know, I think I told you this, Damon. You know, I watched 4 episodes quick. You know, I love the first 3 episodes, and I didn't really care for the oil spill episode. That was the first one that kind of, I don't know, it just didn't grip me like the other 3 did. And then I watched, let's see, the 5th episode was the gay couple with the daughter. And then the 6th episode was the fisherman.
Yep.
And that, you know, the 5th episode I really liked. And then the 6th episode, the one with the fisherman was another one. I was kind of like, meh, you know, I didn't like it as much as I did some of the other ones. So that's another reason why I'll relate it to Room 104. Cause I watch episodes I really, really love. And then I come across ones I don't care for at all. And then I'll come across ones where, you know, I'll watch it, you know, because I'm curious about the ending, but I'm not, you know, it doesn't grip me like I hoped it would. So it's a little inconsistent, but the episodes that hit, like my favorite is the first episode. I think that's the best episode of the show that I've seen. I've not seen episode 7 or 8 yet.
So I think the first episode is probably, it sets the tone very well.
It does.
I think Nicole Beharie's episode in New Orleans is incredibly strong.
Yes, that's a great episode too. So and I like the gamer episode as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the number gamer 2. One was, yeah. That was Oh, I don't know. I mean, I know what they're doing and it's fine, but that one was a little too I'm not sure it paid the I'm not sure it paid the metaphor they were working with the respect it deserved.
Okay. All right. Come on, wait.
We're
Like,
walking a tightrope so we don't spoil anything.
yeah,
yeah, I really
exactly. God
don't
damn
want
it.
to spoil this, you know,
Yep.
because it's
Yep.
very good. But I will just say that, again, I know what they were trying to do. I don't think they nailed it. You know, this show often works in, you know, monsters, both real and metaphorical.
Yes.
And I don't think that they nailed the metaphorical one on this one. I got it.
Absolutely.
I
On
think a lot of
the
people
you mean
got
on the
it.
game on the gamer one?
Right.
Yeah.
I think there was a mistake. Not a mistake. It's not a bad episode at all. It's actually
No.
it's good. I just again I just don't feel like they quite got this one. I would have really liked for them to have gotten it.
No, I genuinely think that there is. Shit, shit, shit.
He wants to spoil it. I
It's
can't.
so hard. It's so good. I mean, yeah.
Well,
The
here we go. Here we
allegory
go.
is
How
here.
about this? How about this? See, why don't we spoil one of the episodes?
No.
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 No, because we're all going to want to spoil a different one.
Exactly.
And now you got half the season
Yep.
gone.
Yeah, we're not gonna be able to spoil any of them.
No, we got to let it go. Just watch it, y'all. You know, if you see us, y'all know us. We don't mind spoiling anything. So typically when we hold them back, it means this has got some merit to it. So
And the acting is fantastic.
agreed.
Yeah, the
Agreed.
acting here is really
Really
holds
good.
all this together.
Honestly, probably better than the writing, which doesn't happen often.
I agree. Between Nicole Beharie, Kelly Marie Tran, whom I've loved since Rose Tico, I know that the majority did not and has treated her accordingly, but I really like Kelly Marie Tran, and her episode was, man, ooh.
Her episode was very
I
good.
have not seen that one yet.
That's the next up for you. That one's next up for you.
Her episode is very fucked up, like the rest of this show. But I
Told
agree.
Damon Caitlin Dever in the first episode. She was phenomenal.
She's a
Yeah.
really good actress, man. She plays that role so well, dude.
Yep.
Yeah,
Did we
and we
lose
see her
him?
again. Scott, you haven't seen her yet, but she comes back. Just fair
No,
warning.
I have. She's in the Nicole
Yeah.
Beharie episode. She is in the beginning of that episode.
She's in New Orleans, yeah, very quickly.
Yeah.
Is she? Now
She's
I
in.
missed that.
Well,
She's.
her episode is from New Orleans. I mean,
Yeah.
from Louisiana.
Louisiana. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she does pop up there and okay, so she pops up again. That's nice.
Yes, she does. In an interesting way.
Interesting, but also really fucking cool.
That's great. I mean, she's the best thing I've seen. She's my favorite part of the season, so I'm on board for that.
Yeah, what
Yeah,
do you got?
I'm having a really hard time fighting the urge to spoil this, so I
Yeah.
really think we should just move on.
Seriously, it's such, God, it's hard.
It's really hard. And actually, throughout the course of our conversation, I've sort of talked to myself up on this joint. I know you haven't seen this guy, seen all of it, but I think you've seen enough to make a verdict. So,
Oh, to give us slashes.
yeah.
Yeah.
I'd probably go 7.5.
It's a solid choice. I would have given it my impulse was to give it a 7, but throughout the course of this conversation and thinking about how much I enjoy certain pieces and how much fun it is to discuss this, like we can have this conversation off air and probably sit around and talk for about an hour having fun. So I'm gonna give it an 8 because I think it was probably a little bit better thinking about it than I realize.
I think it probably deserves a 7.5. So I'll go, you know, right to 7.5. There are some really strong moments here. The acting is so strong. I love it. The allegories in which we're playing with here are just fucking phenomenal.
If we can, without spoiling anything, give us your favorite episode so far.
Well, I finished it.
I know, as did I, but Scott ain't done yet, so we'll go round robin.
Right. Scott already told
my favorite is the first one. I like the first episode.
I'm not mad at that.
I don't know.
I know, right?
And I would go, of the ones I've seen, I'd go 1, 3, 2, 5, and then 6, 4.
5 is tough. Between,
five is tough. It's very good.
It's incredibly well acted. What was his name? Taylor Schilling.
Yeah.
Oh fuck.
Yeah.
He's really, really strong. She can act her ass off because that shit is hard as fuck, man.
It's a really good. Gosh darn it! It is that one is hard. You and I had an hour-long conversation about that shit.
Yep.
That was hard.
Man, it's hard for me because I like them all differently. Like Nicole Beharie's episode, New Orleans. Good God, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one, too.
When you finally figure out what that shit's about?
Yes. Shit. Yes.
Well, because, I mean, I think I was watching the first episode, and I think I wrote you guys, I go, wow, the show's going there, and there's a scene in the first episode where, you know, normally the show wouldn't, you know, they'd maybe hint upon and then move on, and this one hinted upon it and stuck on it, and episode 3 has a scene like that, too, where you kind of go, oh, are they going to, oh, yep, they do, got it.
Yeah, it's one of the parts that goes all the way for the horror.
Correct.
And it goes in a way that you're not always really prepared for. But correct. It goes very well. So.
And there's a really good rug out from under you moment 3-2. And it's like, it's not even halfway through. It's like just before halfway through. And it's good that, you know, the characters play it really well. And it's, that's a good episode though.
I still haven't answered this fucking question, and I'm just like holding off on doing it. God,
I don't think you're gonna be able to do it. So, and I frankly, I'm looking at it, and I don't think I can either. I think it was an unfair question. So give me a top three in no particular order.
3, 1, and 5.
That's good. I mean,
that is good. That is good.
And keep this in mind. 8 almost brought me to tears.
Whoa. Yeah. But that motherfucker was weird. It was just a little too weird for me.
The monster that we talk about in that film is probably the weakest monster outside of 2.
And then there are some, like, the scene, the reuniting scene.
Yeah.
It's messy. This is what
that's one word. That's one word, brother.
Yeah.
That's one word. But yeah,
you say brought you to tears. You know, it's one of the reasons I like episode 1 so much is it, and I can't say specifics, but that almost brought me to tears too. From a personal standpoint too.
Yes, so, without spoiling it for you, yes.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I will say so that.
I was watching it, and I mean, there's a few moments even in the last, like, 60 seconds where it's just a lot of real subtle things. It's, you know, it's I don't know why
I'm taking that
scene. It's after, it's like after Sansa feeds Ramsay to the dogs, and she
Battle of the Bastards. Okay.
And she's walking away, and she's got that smirk as she's leaving the. And I'm good. I'm just kind of like, that's kind of the vibe I was getting, and I'm like, But it hits a lot harder because it's just like it's so much more gut wrenching and real and
yeah.
haunting and shocking. And I don't know. It was that stuff is the stuff you can't unsee, but not necessarily in a bad way because it was yeah, just very no. well done.
There's part of that that like I understand.
Yeah,
right.
I get it. Right.
Right.
I get it.
But what
which dude, which is part of the terrifying.
That's terrible.
That's part of the terrible. Yeah. That's why the tears come because you go, I get it, but man, I can't believe I get even a part of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. They did an outstanding job there.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I think I'm probably gonna do the same thing, no particular order. 1, 3, and 5. No, you know what? I'm gonna go 1, 3, and 4.
Really?
Well, you like 4?
I think that last monologue got him.
The last monologue.
Got also me. Personal.
Go ahead. And there's you know there's some shit in 4 that like hits me in a personal way. So yeah, I would do 1, 3, and 4. You know, but I would say for people who want like definitely 5 gets an honorable mention because it's great. But I would say like if you want it to be what it sounds like, you know, if you just want Monsterland, a good place for people to come in because this is only serial loosely. And you don't even realize that until you finish all of it. It's yep. loosely serially based.
Yep.
But I think you could come in. No, you couldn't come in there because then that would do that. No, I would say if you.
You got to watch them.
Yeah, you got to watch them. Yeah, I was going to try to give you an easy landing point, but just go through them in order. You'll appreciate it.
Yeah, but, you know, to Scott's point, Caitlin Dever's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, there's some outstanding actors in here. Yeah. Like
you but said, this is largely, yes, Taylor Schilling's great, Kelly Marie Tran.
Great.
It's largely carried by the females.
I would agree with that.
Which is great.
There are no real heavy male presences except for
until number 8.
5 and 8. 5 is largely male.
So I do know all I know about these are, you know, I do know that I knew Kelly Marie Tran was going to be in 1 just based on what I had been reading before I jumped into the show, and I know that Mike Coulter's also in it.
Yeah.
So I know that they're coming up.
Mike Coulter's 8, Kelly Marie Tran is 7, and okay. Mike Coulter's 8.
Okay.
And he does the damn thing. You know, he does the damn thing. It's odd to see him in a role like this.
But there's more acting here than at any point in Luke Cage.
There's more acting here than in all of Luke Cage. Like
outside of Mahershala Ali in the first 4 episodes, yes.
Well, I'm saying on Mike Coulter's point part.
Yeah.
And then that's not, and there's no shade there because you know I love that shit. But there's a lot going on with episode 8 of Monsterland.
I'm probably be catching both of those tomorrow.
You should do that. It'll be good for you.
It'll be good for you. It'll be nice to pep up the weekend with the last 2 episodes of Monster. Yeah,
after you watch that shit, it can only go up, brother. It can only go up.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, there's nothing peppy about that shit at all.
Not a goddamn thing. That shit was like a fucking soul colonic, man. It can fuck you up.
It's just so fucking heavy.
Much so.
There are a lot of choices in this in the show. That's one of the things I do love. There are a lot of choices, and a lot of them are humanistic in a way in that we make a lot of these choices, or we hope to put ourselves in positions where we never have to make these sorts of choices.
There you go.
Right.
There you go.
That's a good way to put it.
I think 2 is one of the ones where you don't get a choice, right? Life comes to you, so to speak, and how you choose to deal with it.
Well, I mean, back to episode 1, the monologue that Caitlin Dever's character gives when she's sitting there in the diner, that's it. I mean, that's in the trailer to the show. That's the show. I mean, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And it hits because there's a lot of truth in that as well. And I mean, obviously, you know, they're taking that and taking it in the most dour direction you can, but, you know, it's just a, it rings because there's truth in it. And so that's what hits when you watch these characters make the decisions they're making. And, it's gut wrenching. I mean, it is.
Yeah, man. They're doing an incredible job of placing you in their seat.
And so, I'd like to see them do a, you know, keep going. I mean, let's get some more episodes.
This could be Hulu's Black Mirror.
It exactly. That's exactly what it could be, and they should do it that way. They should keep going.
Yep. It doesn't need to be 8 every season. Give me 3 or 4.
No. Exactly. Do the Black Mirror thing. Hey, sometimes give us 3, sometimes give us 4. If you want to do 6, fine. But yeah, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with that. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think so too. So we're going to step out of this and roll right into Black Box.
Which in a way is almost kind of like a Monsterland
episode. Oh, no. I was going to say it is a natural progression, because this film feels like an extension of that.
And I will also say hits me in the same place that episode 1 of Monsterland did as well.
Yes. Yes, it
does. So I'll be honest, I thought Black Box was only okay until the final third. And then I really feel like it really picked up. And I was like, it kind of blew me away almost. I was kind of like, Oh, okay. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say the movie's terrible. I didn't mean it like that. It's just, I was just kind of watching it going, okay, okay. And then, you know, it really picks up, and I ended up really enjoying this one too. Pleasantly surprised with it.
Yeah. So Black Box is the story of a young man who has recently recovered or is in recovery from a traumatic brain injury suffered in a car accident, and how he is attempting to put his life back together with his young daughter.
Yeah.
So you'll recognize, like, other than Felicia Rashad, most of the people you've never seen before, or you have seen and you just don't know who they are.
Right.
A lot of them have African names, so it's a whole lot of vowels and shit. Mamadou Athi, Tosin Morenofolo, Charmaine Bingwa, like, you know, it's okay. And I think the director, Emmanuel Osei-Kofor, like, you know, we out here. We out here. So shout out to Blumhouse #1, because it's a Blumhouse joint. Yep. This is one of their 4, I believe, offerings
8 for Halloween. It's one of their 8. Well, it's 4 now.
No, 4 now. Total. The 4, yeah. They've released 4 at this point, correct?
Yeah, and then there'll be 4 more next year.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and shout out to them for real, because we always complain about lacking horror fare around this time of year, and everybody does, really, because we've all seen the same 5 or 6 horror flicks that we like. So, like, shout out to them for giving us new content at a time when content is especially valued.
Yes.
And at a time when it's typically usually scant. So they did the damn thing.
And also, this is a film with black people, not a black film.
Agreed. Agreed.
And I do not want to understate that enough. This is a film that has black people in it as the main characters, almost exclusively, but this is not a black film.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with the black experience.
This film resonates. Horribly. This film resonates in a lot of different ways, and I like it.
Which is again, you say it like that, and I don't know. I just watched it and enjoyed the movie. That's my point, though, Scott.
That's exactly the point.
Right? Yeah.
You're not supposed to remember that they're all black. You're supposed to get caught up in the story and give a shit about these characters and their experience.
Right when you were saying that, I did. I was going like, wait a minute, where? I can't even think of a white person that was in the movie.
Right. Other than a teacher.
I didn't even remember that. But
that's right.
But see, I guess that is you know, that's one of the things I like. I like that it's not, you know, hopefully we can just move into a place where we don't, you know, when you read a review and the reviewer doesn't explicitly say,
yes,
oh, you know, they were all black. I'm like, well, why, who gives a shit?
Is the movie good, motherfucker? Right.
I mean, if they were all black, cool. But I mean, you know, I don't
like, I don't want to hear like, aliens, so this fine. All Asian cast, motherfucker, is the movie good?
Correct. Correct.
Right.
So, yeah. But no, this one's, you know, again, the guy dealing with his daughter, I have a new daughter. It definitely,
your daughter's almost a year old. She ain't new.
No, but no. My point being,
Damon, you are trash.
I am bottom of the barrel. You know that.
I got shoes.
It was just very poignant, and I, it did. I mean, again, when it picks up, it just, you know, it hit me right in the feels, and it was good. And I mean, we've gone this far without even mentioning Felicia Rashad, who does a great job in here too.
I think there is a piece of Felicia Rashad's legacy that is going to go down in flames with Bill Cosby. Right.
Probably,
but is unjustly lost to history. Like Felicia Rashad was somebody who is
America's dad. She was America's mom.
Right, but I don't think people truly embraced her as America's mother until later. Right, up until that point, there were so many iconic mothers throughout TV, much more so than the dads. Right, so Bill Cosby as America's dad did a lot to kind of get us to the point where we saw it past his color. Claire Huxtable was monumental in the fact that she was also excellent. But for folks in black community, you know, having an excellent mother, black excellence in terms of female, it's not anything new, right?
She was very recognizable.
Yeah, like we saw so many things that we saw in our families, our mothers. Like, oh, okay, that resonates with us. But for a lot of other people, that shit was new to them, right? She was fluent in Spanish, so a lot of the things that we saw where they would incorporate that into the script, obviously her sister Debbie Allen, the choreography, and you know a lot of the other shit, like there's a ton of stuff happening that comes along with Felicia Rashad. But then when you take her out of that moment and then you realize that she is just an amazing actress. She's restrained, but she's powerful. She emotes so well. Like, I put myself in her shoes a number of times. I put myself in everybody's shoes in this film.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to think that this shit is, you know, the fucking The Shining or The Exorcist or, you know, It's a Wonderful Life. It's not that. It is a good film. It's not great. But if you invest into the characters, there are emotional aspects to it. Tom, jump in.
First of all, I think you folks have done a wonderful job talking around this. I make no promise to do that. I'm just willing to share this. And that's not to say that I didn't like it, because I did. But I can't really talk about it without talking about it. Evil Claire Huxtable is everything I wanted in life and didn't know I wanted. fucking great. She's amazing in this. There is a decent twist in this one. I think there's really a twist that I think we all kind of saw coming, but I think we missed a piece of that twist, if that's fair. You know?
That's a good way to describe it. It's predictable without being too
right. Clear. Right. It was a predictable twist, but that turned out to be fuller than I think either of
them. It was pleasantly executed.
It was. Right. So it got me. I was pointing in another direction.
So okay. Yes, absolutely. So there's that. And there's a moment when, you know, Felicia Rashad has to flex on the bitch. And I stand for it. It was great. I don't know if you guys caught a small moment between the male lead and Felicia Rashad in which everything you needed to know about that character was communicated physically in just a couple of, just really a couple of lines and some body language, which I don't know if that was the director. I don't know if that was a choice the actors made in the moment, but it was everything. I loved this shit. I really did. I really did.
It lets you know everything about their relationship.
Oh yeah.
How
oh,
he
yeah.
got here, how we're mm-hmm. moving forward, the whole deal. And it was
And on the same again, if we're talking about like predictable terms.
Yep.
Clinically predictable, and yet caught that one for sure all the way caught me by surprise. I was like, oh, that's right. That's how we got here. Got it.
Yep.
They also, I mean, I got to give them credit too. They kind of leave you. I mean, the
thinking.
They kind of can reel you in a little bit as well. So it's got a
there's a line earlier in the film that explains what happens with the actions that have been made.
Right.
That, you know, with enough time, maybe there's a room for a sequel. But realistically, you know, this story has run its course and we should be happy with the ending.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I don't think too many people are going to be clamoring for more here.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. This one is not one I'm going to be spending a whole bunch of motherfucking time trying to get back on. But
I would, I mean, we all saw it.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. If I had to give it a slash, it gets a 7.
Yeah, it's 7. Yeah.
Seven's fair.
Seven's
yeah,
fair.
So I think, and you know, I think this will probably be up probably around Halloween. So you ain't got shit to do, pop some popcorn and throw on fucking black boxes.
Yeah, I'd recommend that. About it,
you know, put the shit on while you giving out candy.
Sir, Halloween's canceled here.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, here too. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway, put it on while you having your home based Halloween.
There you go.
Get some candy to your kids, pop some popcorn, and right. Watch this shit when they go to bed. Though, don't show this to your kids. It's bad. Don't do that.
Yeah. Now this is heartbreaking. I mean, there are heartbreaking moments here.
Correct.
And so you're not there yet, Scott. So there are a couple moments here where I have fought against myself because I was tired to not do something that the kids expected. And there's a disappointment that comes along, even though you're tired, that can, like, the young lady who is the daughter in this, she fucking, oh man, she killed me, dude.
Yeah. She
fucking killed me. Her name was Amanda Christine. And she, when you, for those who haven't seen it, I don't want to give it away, but it is just like a small piece of minutia into a relationship. And there's an expectation that if that doesn't happen, the closest of that relationship simply isn't happening, and it, we're not on the same page. And there's so many times within a relationship you realize there's so many little things that you do, right, that are just so special towards you. You know, it could be the way that you hold the door open for your lady, the way that you know, you caress your kid's face, you know, the way you open a glass for your kids, like just little stuff like that. And if they're expecting it, you decide you're not going to do it that time. You make a decision not to do it because you're tired, because you're annoyed, whatever the thing is. That moment happens, and that shit grabbed me.
Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about. It. At first, I didn't know what you were saying, but I was like, "Oh yeah, I know exactly what we're talking about."
Well, yeah, and the thing they do in this flick is they play with that often. you think is happening for one reason.
Yep.
But in reality, it's a whole nother reason why it's happening.
Yep.
And you know, it's again, we're not talking about masterful filmmaking or no shit like that, but solid effort. Like I didn't look up who did the writing or the directing, but this is a solid effort. I would love to see more work from
whoever. I was just gonna say I would check out more from this filmmaker.
Yes. I felt very strongly about what I saw here. If you can encapsulate these little tiny intimate moments in a relationship, I want to hear what else you have to say, because I believe that you have more to say here. So that's just me. I like Black Box. I would recommend it. Again, this shit ain't world breaking, but Emmanuel Osei Kufuor, he did a great job, and I would love to see more.
Also, again, Evil Miss Huxtable. Just try that shoe on for a little bit. See how it feels. Walk around the block with it. Promise you, you're going to like it.
Phyllis Rashad's so good, man. God damn. She's so good.
She's very good. Very good.
She's just really fucking good.
I think because we're so familiar with her, I don't think we really appreciate how good an actress she is.
Right. Exactly.
She's really fucking good.
Yeah. I think that was a point I was trying to make about all the Cosby Show shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like she wasn't just like a good actress. Phyllis Rashad is fucking exceptional. Like there aren't any others like her. Right? Like there aren't a whole bunch of motherfuckers walking around with the skill set of Phyllis Rashad.
And to that point, this movie sort of highlights that, because we get to see her in a vein that we don't often see.
Never seen.
This was definitely enlightening in regards to the kind of tool she's got in her chest. You know what I'm saying? Like, she put on a show.
She can do anything. She can do whatever fuck she wants.
Yeah, no, I would recommend it to anybody based off of her performance alone. Like, no. With no reservation, just off of her performance. Like, she really is really good in this, and good in a way that you're not used to seeing her.
Yep. All right. So we're going to skip right out of Black Box and right into Bad Hair. Tone, you're the only one who saw this. How do you feel about it?
I liked it. I really did. Let me just give everybody sort of like a setting. So where it takes place in... and to Damon's point earlier, this is very much a black horror film. This is not a horror film with black folks in it. This is a black horror film.
Yeah, this is all. Yeah, this is black folks.
Yeah, this speaks directly to the black experience. And what better time for a black horror film to take place than the 80s? Because America was a terrible place to be.
Black. Yeah. Black in the 80s is not a good place to be.
It's not a good look. Not a good look. So we have a dark-skinned, natural-hair-styled woman set in Los Angeles, 1989. At sort of a VH1, MTV type television station, trying to break into being on-air talent. At this point, she's an executive assistant. We find out later she's already pitched one of their hit shows, of which they picked someone else to work on. And she's really just trying to get out here in front of the camera. And it's made known to her that the problem is her hair. She needs to wear hair that is more closely lined up with the beauty standards of the day. And so she goes to a hairstylist and gets one of them Hawaiian silkies. Now, to be fair, I'm not sure it's a Hawaiian silky. It's probably something else. But that being said, she gets a sew-on weave, and hijinks ensue. Really insightful. I think this is a horror flick, and it's scary at times. But nothing scared me more than watching them sew the weave in her head.
Mm.
I've never had a weave sewn in. I've never watched nobody sew in a weave. I can't tell you about the authenticity of it, but you know, that big ass needle pressing through scalp, bleeding, that fucked me all the way up. All the way up. So and again, you know, we have a James Vanderbeek as a smarmy TV executive, and potentially something else. Every one of them mamas in this, you know, you got MC Light's in this shit. You got
MC Light?
MC Light is in this.
Wow. Okay.
MC Light is in this. Lena Waithe is in this. Vanessa Williams is in this. Kelly Rowland is in this.
So every single black woman ever.
Everybody in the mama is in this. Is in this movie.
Love it.
Wait, is Felicia Rashad in it? Well, I've already
seen it. Here you go. Here we go with the bullshit, Scott. Here we go with the bullshit. You know what I mean?
Oh man, Scott, you ain't shit. You ain't
shit. Just sliding to the bottom of the barrel, huh? Scott.
Step into the bad side.
Motherfucker, we are there.
Oh man. No, Scott. Felicia Rashad is not in this. I'm thinking she had some. I think she had more common sense than this. I really dug it. And I will say this: this is no worse than any of your other. You know, this is a very typical B horror flick. You know, this is you know, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, or like, again, think your average regular B horror movie. That's what mm-hmm. this is. Just told from a black perspective and things that scare black folks. Not a lot of preaching, no ABC special moments, really. Quite a bit of gore and some solid scares. Again, I wouldn't feel bad about throwing this joint on Halloween when you ain't got shit else to do.
There sounds like there's more horror to this than I think I anticipated.
Yeah, no, it's got good strong moments of body horror. Not a lot of jump scares, but a lot of a good deal of body horror.
Like, is it more horror than, say, Vampire in Brooklyn?
Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely. But not well, it's more in tone, because yeah. Vampire in Brooklyn has some good horror, but the tone of Vampire in Brooklyn is warm. You know?
It's edgy.
Right. This tone is edgy. It's dark. It's not pitch black. We're not talking about Monsterland dark. You know, you're not going to go through a crisis of the night of the soul, but it's dark. It's anxious. Anxious more than anything else. There's an anxious tone to this film. And then when you add in the elements of body horror and then the just typical anxiousness of like being black in America in a industry that isn't necessarily kind to you, and they do a very good job of like making you feel what that feels like. So again, more adult, more anxious, but also, like I said, a fair amount of body horror, a fair amount of gore. It's not funny, where, you know, they make some horror flicks are made intentionally funny. It's not funny, not in that way.
So I thought this was more tongue in cheek and possibly a little bit more joke haha than what you're describing.
No.
Okay.
No. They made a if I recall correctly, this is made by the gentleman who did Dear White People.
Oh shit. Okay.
And so. Yeah, so there are tones of you know, there are quote unquote revolutionary tones throughout, because that's the way that this cat writes.
Right.
But it's a horror flick. It's a
the beat. Film, not the show, right?
Yeah, the film, not
Dustin the show. Simeon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is as I understood it, the way that this got made was the cat called in every favor he had. which is part of the reason why the cast is what it looks like. And it pays off. Like, it's good, man. It's good, dude. Like, anytime you got Vanessa Williams as the heavy, Vanessa Williams is the heavy in this movie.
Got it.
And she plays it well. Blair Underwood is in this movie. Can you hear me?
Blair Underwood, back out. Back out. He get checked. Motherfucker getting checked. Blair will get a check too.
And he's good at it.
Because Blair can act.
Like, everyone, I shit you not, everyone is in this movie. It's worth the spin.
Look, motherfuckers are giving out black checks. I'm going to get a black check.
Yeah. Yo, put me in a joint. I'll be
black extra. Box, black check. That's the next film. Black check.
Yeah, Scott, so like,
when's your engineering fans going to get a black check?
What?
That could have been more perfect. Could not.
I'm half listening to y'all, but y'all motherfuckers are talking about some black shit. What did I just agree to?
I heard Blair Underwood, and I just kind of zoned out.
Yeah, I can hear it. It's amazing.
That's wow. I love that. That's where you were like, nah. That's where you drew the line.
Right. Blair, it's like, these motherfuckers talking about Blair Underwood. Motherfucker ain't no L.A. Law. Motherfucker talking
about
L.A.
Oh, man.
That's all shit, Blair dude. No, he was in he played an inhuman in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yep. Yeah. He was
His name was Lash. Lash.
He was Ming-Na's ex-husband.
Yeah, he turned into like a fake beast.
Yeah, he did look like a fake beast. You're right.
Yeah.
But
this is an amazing conversation. Y'all are currently having.
Yeah, look, I will check it out. I couldn't give it more than 6.5 slashes. Just because.
So keep in mind, 6.5 is like just below fucking Black Box. Is it that good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Six and a half. I mean, right. For different reasons. But yeah, 6.5. I think it definitely. It's got something to say. The portrayal of L.A. in the late 80s, I think, is pretty accurate. The portrayal of like an MTV type atmosphere in the late 80s, I think, is 100% spot on, and we know this because we know people who were there. And the portrayal in particular of what it's like, what it would be like for a dark-skinned woman in a very corporate environment, and like what that means in terms of how they have to dress and how they have to present themselves and how they have to walk and how they have to style their hair and the kind of comments that are made about them to their face. I think all of that is very accurate. And on top of that, again, solid B-movie scares. I don't see anything wrong with this. I've seen far worse films on cable looking for a horror flick. So like,
I mean, we've watched a lot of bad flicks. So.
Oh, yeah. No, this isn't a bad film by any stretch of imagination. But, you know, after watching Monsterland and Black Box, no, this is probably a flick that is suffering in comparison. Other weeks, it might have got a better score, but not up against the shit it's with right now.
Okay. All right. So, Scott, what have you been watching, man?
Well, usually I usually watch the same thing every Halloween, and this year I've been kind of doing random picks. I started, I guess... since our last episode, the first random movie I picked was 28 Weeks Later. And I've seen it before. I've seen it before. I just wanted to rewatch it. I had the intent of only watching the opening scene, but I ended up watching the whole thing.
So you and I have talked about this. The opening scene is one of the best opening scenes in horror cinematic history.
It is. And if the whole movie was that way, then we would be sitting here talking about how much better it is than the first movie. Yeah. But it's not that. It can't keep that pace up.
No, Danny Boyle could do that. That's a lot.
But it does have a lot of cast right before that. I feel like they blow up or like got a lot bigger. I mean, Jeremy Renner, Rose Byrne, Idris Elba,
Hair Perrineau,
Robert Carlyle, Imogen Poots, they're all in it, and they're all in it like right before you start seeing them a lot more too.
Was Harold Perrineau in Lost at this point?
Oh, and Harold Perrineau, yeah. Let's see, yeah, I think he was. When was Lost? What years were Lost?
Should have started in 04.
Yeah, so this was during that.
Yeah.
But it's good. I think it's a good flick. It's not as good as 28 Days Later. I mean, 28 Days Later is an all-timer. This one is a good follow-up. Then I watched a movie I'd never seen, The Invisible Man, the new one with Elizabeth Moss.
Yep.
And I was pleasantly surprised with it. It got good reviews. It was one that was kind of on my radar. Lee Whannell wrote and directed it. He wrote the original Saw. He also acted in the original Saw. And for as much as I love Saw, his acting, the less we talk about it, the better.
He's gotten better.
He has, but I love Saw. I mean, Saw is one of my favorite horror movies of all time, but he is not a great actor in that movie at all.
No, but I want to say he was in Cooties too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in Cooties. In fact, I think he wrote Cooties as well.
Yeah, he was great in Cooties.
Yeah. Well, and I think I'm saying write Saw. I mean, isn't he the one? Did he write Insidious and The Conjuring, or wrote one of the two of them?
Yeah, it had James Wan direct them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he and James Wan are buddies, so they're like a filmmaking team. But Invisible Man was his directorial debut, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, Elizabeth Moss is always good. She was great here. It's a nice twist on the old Universal monster. And I think it did well enough where they're talking about a sequel and a spinoff as well. That was good. I really enjoyed Invisible Man. And another random movie after that was 8mm. This is right around the time when right before Nicolas Cage started making crap. Although I think a lot of people you would ask would say that 8mm was crap too, but
yeah.
I am not one of those people. I like 8mm. It's got a very, it's very dark. It's very similar to, it's not near as good, but it's similar. It reminds me of Seven. I mean, the writer is the same. Andrew Kevin Walker wrote both Seven and 8mm. So it has that going for it. Very creepy, it's a very dark film. Joaquin Phoenix in an early role, is pretty good in this too. Again, I really like this movie, but I don't think a lot of people would watch this and enjoy it. So, but it's a good movie around now. It's horror Christmas right now. So,
yeah,
this is like prime picking for random movies. That's all the horror shit, really, that I've been just random stuff. I mean, right now I'm just like perusing and there's different things that catch my eye. So it was really just whatever I'm in the mood for that night is, kind of what I was catching. And then Black Box I watched after 8mm. So, yeah, I mean, I want to catch up on, the rest of Monster Land and then, maybe sneak in a few more, this weekend.
Cool. Tonight is the, Nightmare on Elm Street. Marathon on Sci-Fi. So,
okay.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, we probably missed most of it at this point, but
they'll play it since like 4 a.m. Yeah. Oh, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. They're light horror. They're not, they're not us. They're light in the horror, but they surprised me because they said they like number 4 the best.
Huh.
Right.
Four is fun. Yeah.
4 is the beginning of the fun.
Yeah.
4 is the beginning of
three,
the absurd.
3 is the beginning of the fun.
That's 3. 3 is the beginning of the
fun. No, no. So 3 is the beginning of the imagination. 3 is still grounded. 4 is when we lose a lot of the grounding, right? The where old boy decides he's going to dress up. And people don't even realize, it's the same girl from 4 and 5.
And the same, it's the same. She's also in, it's her in three. She's in three, four, and five. It's just not the same actress.
No. No. So, Patricia Arquette,
Yeah, that's, you're right.
who's
I'm
in
getting, I got
three,
that confused. Yep.
they kill her in four. She goes out in
Correct.
like the first scene.
And it's not, yeah, it's not, it's, she's not the same actress. It's
But
not Patricia
Alice,
Arquette.
right, it's not the same actress who plays the character in four that was in three. But then I want to say the actress from four is also the main character in five.
Yes, it, she is. That you're correct.
Okay. And he was talking about the fact that he really liked the new Nightmare. I was like, oh shit. This is amazing. But then he went on to say, he's like, I didn't like the first one at all.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck do you mean? He didn't like the first one, right? Like, what the fuck do you mean, right? And then he said he didn't understand the second one. He's like, it's not a, horror film. It's not a Nightmare on Elm Street film. I'm like, all right, dude, let me give you a little history, right?
Yeah, no, there's, but look, there's a reason to not understand the second film.
Right.
It's fucking bizarre.
So I give him the backstory. He's like, okay, that makes sense. Doesn't love it, but he understands it. And then we get into a tangent, and he talks about the fact that he loves newer horror films because there's a comfort level of, it won't be so bad. It's like, oh man. So,
Dude, were you talking to my brother? Because these are the conversations I have with him.
really? Okay. So
Dude, he
maybe this is just a new thing, for people who are a little younger than we are. I think there's a comfort level, and I want to say there's been a really dramatic genre shift after Scream,
Yes, that's it.
where the rules of horror movies, they were already established. Particularly in the late 70s and early 80s, the rules at which you abide by in horror films have been established, but everybody knows them now.
Right.
So in order for you to be effective, you have to hit like two or three of these, and then your opportunity comes if you want to flip the fourth or the fifth. But you gotta hit them, right? And we just kind of talked about the idea that, I know that certain things are going to play out. And the idea of the final girl, right? Whereas the new Nightmare on Elm Street, like the remake, you don't realize who the main character is for the first 35 minutes of that film. Whereas in some of the other films, particularly now, you know who the final girl is immediately. Like she runs the whole shit. Or I watched The Final Girls with Thaisa Farmiga. Like there's a whole bunch of people in that film, and it's a great film. But that shit is set up. Malin Ackerman.
There's no mystery.
Yeah, there's no mystery. And he was just telling me, he's like, I love that. I like, yes, it's scary, and I kind of get this idea that, that people are going to die, but I'm never really afraid because I know that this person's going to make it. So there was this thing that came out 2 weeks ago about Sinister being like the, I guess like the scariest movie ever. Now it was super subjective, but they hooked these people up, and Sinister, the movie, elevated people's heart rates in, they experience anxiety at a higher rate than any other film that they had viewed during that time. Okay? And I brought up Sinister, and he was like, yeah, I couldn't go in. I wouldn't watch it because the main character's not a woman. So that motherfucker might die. And I had to step back because I was like, oh shit. You can't have a final girl if the main character's a man.
True
That's pretty real shit right there.
that.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
don't know.
He's watching these films on a different level than most people are. I respect this gangster. I really do.
So I've obviously been grooming this motherfucker, right? But by the same token, like, to hear him say it that way, I was like, that's real. You know, because the thing is, back then, when we came up on horror films, there were no terms for final girl. They just happened to be the last motherfucker alive. But, right. Like, when you start, you know, creating terms and shit like that and the rules, like, it changes your viewing experience. You know what I mean?
Yep. That observation, first of all, in regards to, I have to address this in regards to Sinister being the scariest movie of all time.
Yeah, it's not.
To your point, super subjective. And I'm not here to, like, shit on it, but I do want to say it is actually very fucking scary. Like, if you haven't seen it yet, go see it. It's pretty fucking good. But, you know, there's an idea that the tropes, the horror movie tropes, are there to, like, give us comfort as we experience all this anxiety, you know, the secondhand anxiety watching the film, because we know, like, there's a certain way that things are going to go, and there, you know, we know that once we get to this point, this is going to happen. Like, those tropes are really grounding agents to keep us from sort of getting too riled up, you know, because when they're not there, you have stuff like, you know, the exorcism happening. And, you know, my mom and dad told me, you know, they went to the exorcism in the theater, and people were, like, fainting, passing out, and, and had to leave. It was too much, you know.
Yeah, because the line of is real, it was blurred, it's gone.
Right, it's too much. So, you know, you need those little tropes to sort of give people a little, you know, handrail, like, okay, you are here, it's all right.
Blair Witch is another one.
Yeah.
You know, we're taking the handrails off. Continue.
Fucking, Paranormal Activity.
Yep. Hell yeah.
Because the final girl is the villain.
She's not even a villain. Just the final girl is not really a final girl. Like, the idea behind Paranormal Activity is, like,
yeah, they flip it on
the journey thing. Is just as scary as the destination.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Scott, yeah. Do you agree with that shit at all? I know you said you...
No, I do, but, you know, the point I'm kind of thinking of is something a little different. You know, you brought this whole conversation up with Nightmare on Elm Street, and we always talk about how number two breaks the rules, and how number two is a very different movie and whatnot, but, you know, the ironic thing about number two is, in a way, it's very ahead of its time, because there's no final girl in that movie at all. It's a final guy.
Well, yeah, he's the first Scream King. So
you're correct. Yeah. And it's just kind of an ironic little twist in there that, you know, because I think even in more recent times, you know, what I mean is, especially, you know, now that movie has kind of had a light shined on it, because it was, you know, I think, you know, the reviews of the past have called it homoerotic, and because that's the way that reviewers would call a movie like that back in the day. But when you watch it now, you're kind of going, well, wait a minute. I mean, it was this movie made in 2018 or something? Right. I mean, this has a very strange feeling to it, because it is very different. But at the same time, I mean, really, the only thing that's different is it's just not a girl. It's a guy.
Yeah. But there's S&M.
Yep.
You know.
Oh, no. It's still very weird. But it's not
very weird.
But it's interesting to look back on it now through the lens of, you know, the past few years, as opposed to in the 80s. I mean, the 80s, you know, everybody's mind was different. So you watch a movie like that and you go, wait, this is really strange. But you watch it now and you just kind of go, all right, yeah, let's, you know, on to the next one.
Yeah. Yeah, but having these conversations with folks who found out the rules from Scream, so to speak, changes your viewing.
Sure.
You know, the meta within the meta, you know, for folks who get introduced to horror with Scream and then saw Cabin in the Woods, it just fucking, you know, it's like a cheat sheet to a fucking pop quiz, man.
Yeah, this is, you know, not knowledge and wisdom that we accumulated over years of watching good and bad flicks that, you know, they can get over the course of, you know, 2 or 3 hours because they've watched these two commentary type films.
Yep.
And I'm not mad at them, but it isn't the same kind of thing.
No. It's not. You know, it's playing Contra on the 30 lives, right?
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what it feels like.
So, no, you got a good point. You got a good point. I actually, that would be something I would love to see, sort of a layman's breakdown of the Nightmare on Elm Street films. I mean, and when I say love to see, I mean probably be terribly frustrated by, but.
Of course you would. Yeah, of course you would. There's no other option here.
So before we got way late on that tangent, I think Scott was talking about The Invisible Man. Is that where we were?
Or had you finished it or not? I don't think he had. My bad, Scott.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, I did. I said I just ran through some randoms.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I ended up talking about my randoms about tangentially talking.
We got off on. I mean that's good. I mean that's a, you know, Final Girl is a great trope to discuss in terms of horror in general, and especially how much it's changed through the years. And you know, I made the comment to you where you're talking to my brother. You know, my brother tends to watch a lot more of the newer stuff too. And, you know, he always used to tell me one of our favorite movies growing up too was Jaws. And he made a comment to me years ago. He goes, "Hey man, how cool would it be to remake Jaws?" And I looked at him and I said, "I think you're missing the point."
Yep.
I was like, that right there is kind of a line in the sand. It's just like, no, you know, the beauty of Jaws is if you remade Jaws, it would just be a CGI fest. It'd be like Meg, you know, and we don't want that.
No, that is the Jaws remake. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, like there's science, there's, you know, data.
A larger shark. Of course, the shark is a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Like, Megalodon and not a great white shark. Yeah. Of course it is.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I think Jaws can be left alone.
Oh, absolutely. You do Jaws one. Absolutely right.
Has to be.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big... Yeah, I'm not usually big on remakes. Invisible Man has been so long, and it was a nice inventive take on it. Cool. And I, you know, Dawn of the Dead is a great example of a great remake. Not all remakes work though, and I tend not to enjoy a lot of them, or I fight against it. I think there needs to be, we need like a rule book that say, well, you have to wait a certain amount of time before you go to the remake route. Get far away from it for a new audience and then reinvent it so that if the old fans watch it, they can be pleasantly surprised.
I mean, you know, that would be nice. You know, we call it the Spider-Man 3 clause for remakes. Or not even just the Spider-Man clause, because we've seen way too many Spider-Men. But, I mean, I've watched The Invisible Man as well. I dug it. Something that sort of took me out of it, though, was looking at this dude. He's not, like, he looks like an average dude. He's like, what, 5'11", 6 feet tall.
I know where you're going with this.
About 165 pounds, something like that. Like, he's not like, he ain't no bruiser of a dude. And, like, he repeatedly just runs through motherfuckers in this movie.
Well, there's a scene when he hands... And I
Aldous
think
Hodge.
Damon said this, Aldous Hodge's ass. And I'm like, it did. I remember in the movie... Or while I was watching the movie, I was kind of, that was the one thing where I kind of like, wait a minute, why didn't he just reach up and like tackle the dude? Or, you know, he knows the dude's invisible, like go up, reach up and grab the motherfucker.
He mashed Aldous Hodge out.
Dude.
Which again, just doesn't seem realistic, you know? And I get, you know, boxers have a saying, the most dangerous punch is the one you don't see coming. So I like get that in regards to like, you don't expect.
Yeah, but this, I mean, this guy, he had been hinted at, he knew it was an invisible man. I mean, right. He knew what was good. I mean, like he could have like just reach up and hit the motherfucker.
If you got 20 pounds on a dude, and I think we could all say Aldous Hodge easily has 20 pounds on.
Aldous Hodge would have whooped this dude's ass.
Yeah. If you got 20 pounds on a dude, even if he jabs you and you don't see it coming, you're probably going to be able to shake that off and like figure out what, you know, what to do next. It just seemed a little.
It was the one. And, you know, I mean, I guess in retrospect, somebody would watch it and be like, ah, you guys are nitpicking. I was like, I don't know. That's the one scene that kind of did take me out of it, though, a little bit. So
just that scene, but when he's in the hospital and he's like pulling cops' guns out of their holsters and shooting, and you can't see him, but you can see the gun. Like no one ever really seemed to react.
Well, it's the same thing that happened in, you know, when you watch a Child's Play and you know, the first time you see Chucky, I can imagine being shocked, but while you're fighting him, I mean, at the end of the day, you go like, well, run up and grab him and throw him in the fire. He's a doll.
Right.
Like, kick that motherfucker in the wall.
At some point your shock and your wonder, all that other jazz, wears away and you realize like, oh, I'm fighting for my life. I probably should take this seriously.
Correct. So yeah, I you know, and speaking of that, there is one movie I didn't mention that I had rewatched, or there's this movie that had been on my radar for a long time, and I was actually going to rent it the other day on Prime Video, but I saw that they added it to Netflix, and that's Splice. Splice.
Oh no.
I had never watched it.
You'd never seen it before, Scott?
No, I had never seen it before.
Oh man.
So remember before the episode, I told you there was a movie that had a scene that took me out of it when I laughed hysterically at it, and that is Splice.
So it's the first, I'm not gonna talk about this shit. It's been out forever. So
it's when Adrian Brody
has sex with the
I laughed my ass off, and it was because you could see it coming, and
from a mile away. But the thing that keeps it in check is you think like decency dictates like that thing looks like a chicken, nigga. Like what are you doing?
God, dude, it was that, and then it was. Hysterical when he looks up, he's caught by his girlfriend fucking their, for lack of a better term, pet daughter, kind of. I mean, and then he grabs his clothes and runs. And then he grabs his clothes and runs outside, and I was laughing my ass off, and I was like, this movie just took a turn, and that is not a good one. It suddenly became like a comedy for just a split second. It was kind of like the jarring shift that what's the Walrus movie that we watched? The
Tusk.
Yeah.
Mr. Tusk.
It's that jarring shift that just completely removed me. And I was like, wait a minute, why did he had sex with this chicken creature that's also his daughter, and because he saw his girlfriend in her, because it, like what? And then he runs after her with his clothes outside and she drives away. And all I could think of is like a sitcom. And I'm going like, oh man, I'm expecting to hear like Seinfeld music playing now. And then, you know.
Oh, that is Curbed Enthusiasm.
That's
Curbed Enthusiasm. Yes.
That's Larry David. Yeah.
Yes. Man, so it took me up to that point. The movie was fine, you know what I mean? It was fine. It was weird, but it was fine. And then I saw that, and I'm like, wow, this is extremely disappointing. Like I invested in this to just laugh hysterically at a scene that I'm sure you're not supposed to laugh at.
It was creepy. It was weird. It had like a strange vibe. And when that shit happened, you were like, man, fuck.
Yes.
Well, and then. So, like, if you were to describe Splice to someone, it sounds like an alien Jerry Springer show. So,
wow.
Adrian Brody fucks the pet daughter chicken alien creature, and then it changes sex, and then it fucks the girlfriend, who's also its mother, and she's pregnant at the end? Like, I mean, what? I mean, damn, man. I mean, this
and,
movie
and
just
thing, I love Sarah Polley.
Oh, I do too.
I first saw her in Go, obviously, Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, she's phenomenal in Dawn of the Dead.
You know, she's great. Like that little period of time was the Sarah Polley time. She was hot, right? Yep.
Yep.
Not hot as in attractive, but like she was the hot actress to play in.
She was a good actress. Correct. Right. Then, so, you know, this movie, I had heard really good things about it too. So I just kept passing and passing on. And then I'm going to see it again. One of the random movie picks, like, oh, I'm going to watch this place. And, oof, boy, that took a turn that I did not expect. And, I just thinking back on it, I was like, man, what an enjoyable moment in the movie for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Splice is twisted. I mean, you know, we watch some twisted shit, but Splice is twisted, man.
Well, it brings up a lot of, you know, and I, you know, we watch a lot of horror and don't talk about this a lot, but even like, again, you know, watching it even now through a different lens, you know, I mean, right from the very beginning, I mean, the opening fucking scene, they're creating life. And then, you know, they're like, oh, it's so beautiful. And they're holding this giant slug. And I'm going, man, okay. I mean, this movie's really just out there a little bit, a little more so than I thought. So, yeah, it was, I would not recommend Splice is ultimately what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a tough watch. It's not an easy watch.
No, it's not. Unless you want to see Adrian Brody fall in love with a creature and have sex with it.
Yeesh. Tough way to describe it.
I mean...
And then have the creature change sex and have sex with Sarah Polly at the end, with its tail.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Yeesh. Yeah. It's a weird flick, but you know, ultimately enjoyable.
I guess. I mean, enjoyable for the wrong reasons.
Look, enjoyable doesn't necessarily have to be for intended reasons.
Touche.
Right?
It's definitely a weird flick. But, no, I'm not going to say it's enjoyable. It's too weird. Like, you can watch it.
Yeah.
I would probably, if I wanted to fuck with, you know, fuck with somebody, I would probably be like, oh yeah, watch Splice. You'll enjoy that one.
Dre.
You, sir, are trash.
Oh man, that's good. That's just good, clean fun right there.
Clipping air horns. Puerto Rican air horns. Dominican air
horns. Oh yeah, I know them well.
I'm about to say, motherfucker, you probably hear them shits all the time, particularly with the nonstop soundtrack of reggaeton that happens.
You know what? I never hear it here. I don't know who's playing it, but it's not here.
You never hear reggaeton there?
No, I live in the Dominican neighborhood, so I get a lot of salsa.
Salsa and bachata.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm good with. A lot of salsa and a lot of English language music. A lot of pop.
Lots of fucking horns. Yeah. Again, I ain't shit, I know.
I mean, we covered this.
Right, clearly. So yeah, Splice is a wild one. Not one I would recommend. You know what? I don't necessarily know Splice is a bad film.
It's not a bad film.
But there are moments in it that will take you out.
Okay, I you say that, and all I'll say is, well, it's definitely not a good one.
No, but the thing is, like, a couple of the moments take you so far out of the film, it's hard to, like, get back on board and watch and finish.
There's a moment that's burned in my brain as Adrian Brody is whatever with his pet daughter. I'm never going to get that out of my mind.
Pet daughter is a new name. Like, that's daughter. From now on. Pet
the daughter. New, as he's having sex with the pet daughter.
Pet daughter.
Her leg is thumping against the ground like a dog's leg.
A dog, yeah. Pet.
Like, it was...
Dude, she takes him at one point and wraps her tail up to like, push up against him harder when they're standing up.
Yeah, motherfucker, you know, almost got the... You know what I mean? He almost got the tickler in there.
Yeah, right?
Little tickler. I'm
not sure if I like you anymore.
Oh my god. That's funny. But yeah, you know, that's how it is. That's how it is, bro.
Yeah, I will never watch that movie again. But
yeah, I don't know if it's a return viewing.
No.
I don't know if it's a multiple time viewing. I always feel like
how could you even ask me to watch that scene twice? Like, no.
Yeah, and if I did, man, I would definitely be under the influence of alcohol or drugs, because that's...
Or drugs.
Would have to be.
Drogas! So, real quick, let's try and wrap it up. We got Hulu just streamed Marvel's new horror series called Hellstrom.
Yeah. So this show.
So don't spoil anything. I've not watched any of it yet.
This show is perfectly adequate.
Okay.
Decent plotting, decent direction, decent pacing. Actually, I'll say the pacing is better than decent. The casting is where they killed it. Like, the cast is phenomenal in this. Like, really good. And the acting is pretty good as well. It's all the right for me. I can't quite give it. I can't give it an 8. It's going to get like a 7.5. It's good.
Okay. So I watched the first couple episodes, and it definitely has. Has a mystic, kind of feeling to it. It has a Constantine feel to it. You know, it's not bad, but
I'm absolutely right about that Constantine feel, though. That's very much there.
Yeah, you know, I think even down to a point, at one point they talked about smelling fire and brimstone or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there you go. I will say, though, that the first episode is intentionally vague with a lot of connections. This is a binge watch. This is not a take it as you go watch.
No, absolutely not.
Because if you take it as you go, I don't know if you're going to go back to it.
No, I can't see anybody making it past episode 3. If you're doing it like once a week, this is a bit.
Yep, I agree.
Oh, man. That's interesting.
That's not to say it's bad, because it's not
take
bad.
Take 1 and 2. Do 1 and 2. And then 2 and 4. Like, just do 2 at a time. Because if you watch them 1 at a time, you're going to stop.
Agreed. The plot does move a little slow in places, especially in the beginning. But I will say again, like, I really do have to give a shout out to the actors here, because I do feel like the leads are charismatic and compelling while still appearing to be haunted. Their quote unquote mother is, you know, great at times. And their extended family too are actually their extended family is probably the best part of the cast. Cause they really do a good job, sort of projecting like warmth and fear all at once, which, you know, after you watch the show, you'll sort of have a better understanding of why they need to do that. You know, just good flick. Again, you ain't doing shit. You can't go nowhere. So, like,
right, you ain't go nowhere. Motherfucker, they shutting shit back down.
I know.
All y'all motherfuckers that went out into the streets and shit, motherfuckers having parties for 120 people and kids getting sick. Motherfucker, now we back in the house again. While it's about to get cold, we about to be in the house anyway, but now we can't go out.
Oh, yeah, so just so. Don't just turn on. You ain't doing shit anyway. Like, you won't, you know, you won't regret it.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Particularly, No. So here's why I say that. If you are a person who is looking for the Marvel in this, that shit ain't there.
You're not going to find it. No.
This ain't a horror, mystical art, comic book, horror shit.
It's disappointing because, you know, this character in the books at least has strong tie-ins to popular characters, and I think there's definitely a way to go here. But
is there a Doctor Strange tie-in here?
There is a
in the comics. There's a Ghost Rider. Okay.
I mean, he's crossed over. I mean, the character, his name's Damon Hellstrom in the comics, he like interacts with like Ghost Rider and Blade. And
yeah.
Like he's a darker, mystical, supernatural Marvel guy.
Yeah.
So he's like a Midnight Sun type of character.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Oh man. Ooh, had to take a breath here. Ooh. I went hard with the vodka, the strawberry lemonade, and the Sprite. I didn't even tell y'all because I'm a people like that. It's COVID, motherfucker. We at the house anyways. Don't matter.
Ain't no lie.
Fuck out of here. Be hungover. Do the math on work, motherfucker. My bad, y'all. Y'all just got a little look inside my mind and shit. So, Hellstrom, I don't know if I can recommend it, but I didn't finish it. Tone, you finished it.
I did. It's a good plot. Zips along pretty quick. Interesting. It's just straight up and down journeyman work. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing super right with it either.
Yeah.
You ain't got shit else to do. You might as well just throw it on. But you were absolutely right about the lacking of, you know, you don't see a lot of the MCU in it. Not the MCU's polish or shine, not any other characters. You could, given the information that you have from the show, you couldn't even expect there to be another tie-in or something like that. Like, they don't really address this character's shared experience with others. So it's an odd choice on their part, but it is what it is. Ultimately, give it a look. If it's not your thing, it's not your thing. But I don't feel bad recommending it for a slow, boring, or rainy day. Don't watch this when you've got other shit to watch. Because then you're going to be mad at me, and I don't want to deal with that.
Send everything now.
Well, shit. I mean, if you want a dark MCU, the big news Marvel made this week, they cast Oscar Isaac as Moon Knight.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
I don't necessarily know if that's true. Mark Spector is a dude who has dissociative disorder. He is a schizo.
They got a good actor to play a character who's going to have some range. So.
Yeah, he has a lot going on.
Physical, though? Like, Moon Knight is very physical. Like,
yeah, because the motherfucker loses his mind just be beating motherfuckers up.
Well, there's that, and also he's one of the few Jewish characters. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Moon Knight is an Egyptian Jew. Oscar Isaac is none of those things. I think it would have been...
I thought he was Jewish.
I don't think Oscar Isaac is.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac sound kind of Jewish, but I'm not sure. and I don't want my Jewish folks to be mad at me. You know, my Star of David Bays. I don't want y'all to be angry with me off that shit, so I'm gonna let that go. But yeah, the Fist of Khonsu. Like, he has a lot of Egyptian tie-ins too, so he has like a lot of Africa. But he's clearly Jewish. Jewish American, former U.S. Marine turned CIA. It's a lot.
That's how I feel. And I just think, you know, as Marvel's moving more towards inclusion, I think it would have been pretty cool to have a Jewish superhero, even if this isn't like the best representation of Jewish manhood. But yeah. it would have been dope to have a Jewish superhero. So.
Minus Yahoo. But he couldn't do it, yeah. The violence part. Yeah. So he has dissociative identity disorder. Yeah, man.
So yeah, buddy. Mandalorian today.
Yeah, so right now. I think if you go to Disney Plus right now, it's out. So the Mandalorian Season 2 drops. Pablo Pascal returns as Mando. And we pick up, I think, right where we left off with Gus Fring.
Yeah.
Wielding
the Darksaber.
The Darksaber.
And we're supposed to get Ahsoka Tano and Boba Fett this year, too.
And I believe we are going to get more of Yaddle's people, because this takes place after the events of Return of the Jedi. So Yoda's dead at this point.
Correct.
So Yaddle is, we're supposed to be taking Yaddle on the search for his people.
Yeah.
So we may see more Yodas.
Which, that'll work. I mean, Yoda's great. The child's great.
Yeah, I'll sign up for that. The child is great. Incredibly cute. We've mentioned this before, but the choice to go practical effects as opposed to CGI is definitely paying off there.
Correct.
Like, I'm here for it. I can't wait. I don't know if we're going to get any more Gina Carano, but I'll take
one. She is.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely in it still.
Yeah, she's supporting her.
Yep.
Give me seconds. I'm all
I think she's like in almost every episode.
Yeah, she and Carl Weathers are like the Mandalorian's crew.
Yeah. They have Scooby Gang now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with it. I'm with it.
I like Gina Carano a lot. I got to say, she has surprised me in her ability to act and her move from MMA to acting. So shout out to her.
She's particularly done. I mean, this is probably her best role yet.
Yeah, I mean, but no one's going to be good in the beginning, so.
Yeah, all that shit takes work. But, you know, to Scott's point,
let's be true. Most motherfuckers are not Dave Bautista.
Which, I mean, isn't that kind of wild to think that he is, like, so good at playing that role? I mean, he's just, he's really great at playing that character.
Yeah, but Dave Bautista went to fucking actor school. Let's move through this shit seriously. He dedicated himself to the craft.
Now, you mean John Cena hasn't?
I don't believe so.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Dave Bautista is a much better actor than John Cena.
Oh, no. Dude, I was joking. Yes, he is, of course.
He's probably a better actor than The Rock. The Rock is more charismatic and more charming, but I think Dave Bautista is a better actor.
I think you're probably right.
So, yeah. Mando is here. Give me your overlying reactions to The Mandalorian after season one, Scott.
I think it is the best Star Wars has been since the original trilogy. I think one could argue it's comparable to the original trilogy in terms of entertainment value. They essentially take toys from the toy box and create new ones from them. I mean, you know, you're getting Boba Fett, Yoda, IG-88, you know, a Sith Lord, Darth Vader, all kind of in this, but rewritten a little bit. Well, a lot of it, they're brand new characters, but they are based on a lot of characters we already know. I mean, hell, you know, the whole idea of Mandalore in general came from Boba Fett, who was only in like 30 seconds of the original trilogy, you know what I mean? So but they've taken that and ran with it, and they've done that in books and comics and TV shows for years, but this does it really, really well. It hit at a really great time. People were very down on Star Wars. This came and kind of saved it, so to speak. I really enjoyed it. I loved it. And I wanted more immediately after. They're getting good actors to be in this. Really good stunt casting, and they're going to bring in the stunt fan favorite characters now into the second season. You know, I mean, we all were wondering in the first season, and they even hint upon it in one episode. Hey, is Boba Fett going to be here? And they kind of do hint that he is alive still, and maybe he's going to pop up again. And they've confirmed he'll be around somehow. They're doing good things. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It's certainly an enjoyable show that, I mean, I think Disney has struck gold on with this one.
Yeah, I mean, this one's truth, man. This motherfucker, like I said, it breathes new life.
You don't even have to be a Star Wars fan to like it.
No, I agree. But what Star Wars fans do get out of this is it just breathes new life into what people consider a stale franchise at this point. Right. But, you know, there's the piece where people are like, oh, it's told by fans. Like, yeah, which means that Jon Favreau genuinely cares about this shit. He's curating a story that up until this point, Disney has destroyed because they destroyed all of the other shit, all the books, the Thrawn mythology, the trilogy, the shit that people know as really, really good. A lot of the Ahsoka stuff that's not in Rebels or Clone Wars is not canon any longer. So this is the only way where you're going to get some of that outside shit that's really going to propel kind of the next wave of Star Wars, either films or series. So I'm looking forward to it. I really like what Pablo Pascal has done without even, you know, talking or showing his lips. So I like the show a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to get a co-sign from me. Really good. I can't wait for the next season.
Oh, Gina Carano. Got it.
Hey.
So that's about it. Anything else before we get out of here, man?
I don't think so. We're keeping it going hot, man.
Love it. Love it. And still an hour and a half show. So
We tried.
But I like it though. But yeah, if there's nothing else, man, everybody please be safe. Wear your masks, vote for Biden. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you, go out and vote. I don't care who you vote for. Nah, motherfucker. Vote for Joe Biden. That's the only goddamn choice. If you're not voting for Joe Biden, don't listen to our goddamn show. Because clearly we're not your people. Y'all not our folk. Okay? And
we end the show. I mean, the next show is either going to be a happy one or a sad one.
Oh, man. Fuck, you're right. You are absolutely right. We're going to have a show next week. Shit.
It's going to be all right. We're going to get through.
We don't have a choice. So, kids got to eat. You know.
Right. Here you go.
So, we got to keep it moving. But, goddamn, man. Be safe. Don't get the Rona. We'll watch horror films. You got a couple more days. Because I'm sure by November 1st, all the goddamn horror films will be gone. Like, this will be a perfect weekend for there to be a lot of horror films. I guarantee you that's just going to be gone by Sunday. Hopefully Saturday they go all in, because Halloween's on Saturday. There's no trick-or-treating here in Montgomery County, Maryland, so for sure.
Absolutely.
It's neighborhood by neighborhood here.
Yeah, but they're about to shut y'all down because y'all fucking up out there.
I just got done reading an article that no county got turned to purple because Hamilton County, where I'm at, was on the verge of it and it didn't make it that high. So that's a good thing, but it's, you know.
Yeah, was it Governor DeWine?
Ohio's in the crosshairs of one of the worst states. So
yes. Yes, it is. Gave y'all motherfuckers too much choice, and that's what y'all did with it.
Well, DeWine did a really good job at the beginning.
He absolutely did. He was kind of the shining example of how you manage in the beginning. But once he let motherfuckers out, he did not pull the reins back.
Well, I think he's afraid of what happens if he tries it or shuts it down again.
Well, he is afraid of what happens, particularly in the lower socioeconomic parts of Ohio. Right.
Yep.
Where people being out of the house is what that particular part of the really all of the money and the industry and everything is dependent upon. And it's like, look, they suffered enough. I can't really do it to them again. Right. There were some restaurants and bars and other places that just barely made it through. They will be gone now.
Well, but he's also got a safe face if he wants to stick with the party too. So.
Oh yeah, well if Trump wins, motherfucker, like he gonna have to change his tune up. So.
Yeah. Well.
I hope not. I hope we don't have to worry about that reality, but. You know. Phew. Y'all white motherfuckers have done crazier things, so we'll see.
Damn it.
You know, I want to be very, very intentional about the way I say that. This is not an indictment of all white people. This is just an indictment of white people
decided yeah, that exactly what you
racism
mean.
And, you know, xenophobia and, or Jesus, like, just every ism, every type of thing. And even if you aren't it, you've decided that someone being it is not a deal breaker for you. And y'all motherfuckers vote for Trump. So I don't have a whole lot for you. So yeah, y'all can kiss my ass. Wow, that elevated quickly. Maybe I edit this part out. Probably not.
It'll just end abruptly. All right, guys, see you.
Peace. No. Hey, y'all know how I feel about this shit. I don't give a fuck about them. Tell anything last before we get out of here?
No, I'm good, man. I'm good, man. Just everybody, y'all go out there, enjoy your Halloween. Be safe, be sound. Have some fun.
You know, love in the heart of the city. So. Ain't gonna be no dress up at Halloween out here. We're gonna have a pizza, but ain't gonna be no trick or treating. I'm just gonna spend $40 on bags of candy to give to my own goddamn kids. It's bullshit. We used to do the goddamn Switch Witch, where the kids would take all their Halloween candy and put it outside their doors, and then they would get a present afterwards. But I don't know if the Switch Witch is gonna come to the house this year.
Man, that's pretty good.
Well, it's how you save the kid's teeth, man. Think about the fact that you were eating off that goddamn Halloween candy until fucking Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine what that did to your teeth. Now, as a parent, if you could find a way, like, I'll gladly spend $30 on a goddamn toy or video game instead of the thousands of dollars that I will have to spend for dental bills later. That's just me.
Huh. Well put.
Hey, you know, the idea is to go trick or treating and then get about 10 or 12 that you can keep and stash away, and the rest got to go. So,
got it.
Well, this has been a parenting corner with Damon. This has been life corner with Damon. I would blame the Tito's, but I do this shit sober. So, yeah.
Yeah, don't let them fool you.
Scott, look, Scott,
he's drinking Tito's all day.
Look, Scott has fucking, you have been witness to many of my fucking sermons, and his motherfucker still is, so shit can't be all bad.
Yep. Veryl just look at me and she'll go, wait, what, why'd you take all my candy away? I was just like, honey, you actually get a really, really badass toy, though.
That's it. No, but you can't tell him that the Switch Witch is you. This guy tell him the Switch Witch exists. After about a week, right? Tell them they get to choose 10 pieces. Then the rest of the stash goes in front of their door at the end of the night. And they go to bed just like the Tooth Bunny. Or it's wow, Tooth Fairy.
Tooth Bunny. Well, yeah, yeah. Tito's.
Tito's. Yeah, there it is, right? Just like the fucking Tooth Fairy. You fucking put that bitch out there. You know, they stash. You take the stash. You put the toy in the stash place. And everybody's good. Good to go. Then you keep all the shit that you like. The colored flavored Tootsie Rolls for me. Yeah. And she gets all the Reese's she needs. And the kids get a toy they want. Sounds like a win-win.
Papa Damon.
That's it. Are they doing? They're not doing Halloween in Puerto Rico, are they? I guess not. All right. Well, on that note, for Scott Fortone, this has been Get Out the Room. Find us anywhere good podcasts are found, and we'll see y'all next time, man.
Peace.